My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, July 25th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, I need you to go over to Apple Podcast, give this show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. If you like something, why don't you share it with people? You do it for famous people, so why don't you do it for a guy that has a day job and is really talented in the arts? But if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival and sign up. $3 a month for hours and hours and hours of bonus content. Shout out to Evan for signing up. Thanks for being a new patron of this podcast. I really appreciate you. This is episode 523. I have a super special return guest, comedian Gordon Baker Bone. You know him from The Bad Advice Show, Period Piece Podcast, and Drunk Black History with Brandon Collins. And I'm going to share that conversation that I had with Gordon with you in a bit right now. I am not sitting in my apartment recording this intro. I'm recording this intro on a Friday. Actually, Friday, what is it, the 23rd of July? I'm in a hotel at the beautiful Borgata Casino and Resort. I've done 3 shows this past week, and I got one more show tonight, and then I go back to life, back to reality. There goes gravity. And back to, you know, my workaday world. So I've been enjoying myself. I've just been relaxing. I've spent, you know, you don't know how hard how tired you are until you're on like some kind of vacation. And I just kind of chilled and relaxed. I didn't do anything. I didn't go on the boardwalk. I slept. I read a bunch. I finally read Full Dissonance by Howard Bryant. Fantastic book of essays. I read some Ironheart, the two, I don't know what you call, I guess the anthologies, the two, what is this? Ironheart, Riri Williams, and then Ironheart, Meant to Fly, the Brian Michael Bendis. And then the Eve Ewing versions, like the whatever. I read that. I was interested in that. Hopefully, I think they're going to make like a cartoon or a Disney Plus series out of it. So I just wanted to have some background on it. So I read that. And I got to get a hold of this. I got this Ta-Nehisi Coates, We Were 8 Years in Power. I got Bitter Root, which is a graphic novel that I need to read. So I just need to make more time to just read and not just be in front of screens all the time. I do a lot of reading on my computer, but that's just articles. So I need to get back into it, but I'm glad that I read what I read during this time instead of going to the movies. And I didn't really feel like I wanted to see anything. I mean, like I said last week that I was interested in seeing these movies, but then some of my homies was like, you know, this movie, And I was like, oh, okay, well, instead of dropping like 14 or 15 bucks on something that's mediocre or mid, I just figured I'd just wait and go till I'm back in town and go use my AMC stubs. The closest AMC near here, Atlantic City, is about 50 plus miles away. And that, I mean, I could change and go to see something, maybe, but I don't know. Like, because I kind of want to see Pig, that Nicolas Cage movie where they steal his truffle pig and then he goes all John Wick on everybody. That's the thing that I'm most excited to see that's out in the theaters. Old, I always like to see what M. Night Shyamalan does. I know people kind of hate on him, but well, what was the last joint? The Glass was not that great. That the way that ended was just like, wow, what, really? That was kind of a bummer. But I still like how his shit is grounded in reality. Now, I heard Old was like, the premise, the idea was really good, but maybe the execution wasn't that great. So I don't know. I'm just not excited. And then Snake Eyes, people were like, ah, it's all right, you know. So I don't know. In the fall, I guess things will be better. And then what else came out? The movie where Mark Wahlberg, Joe Bell, where he walks the country because his kid's bullied or something like that. And Mark Wahlberg was a bully himself because he beat up that Asian guy that people trying to sweep under the rug before he blew up. Stop Asian hate, guys. Stop all hate. Yeah, so I'm not that excited. And plus, some good shit just came out this week. The He-Man Masters of the Universe came out. I literally just finished watching that. I was a He-Man fan when I was a kid. I had a bunch of those toys. I was a privileged child that had Castle Grayskull. I did have a bunch of those toys, and I liked it. But I don't remember it like a lot of people remember the lore and all this stuff. But I have to say, you nerds are in for something when you see this part one of this Masters of the Universe revelacion. It's good. I enjoyed that. Then you got Ted Lasso coming back, and Physical's out, the newest episode, the Rose Burns. It was almost like I'm not that hard pressed for having some type of entertainment while I'm down here. So it's just like, maybe I'll go out, maybe I won't. I mean, being at a resort is kind of like being in an ecosystem. So you don't really have to leave. And then when you leave, they make you pay $5 every time you leave, even if you're, I don't know if they do it if you're an employee, but technically I'm an employee at this place, but you do have to pay like $5 for parking when you leave. They got to get you for the money. But I did have a $6. You do get a discount with food and stuff. And I had what would have been like $6 container of cantaloupes cut up, and they were fucking fire. They were really good. So I got my discount, but I tipped the server or the person working in the food court. So that's cool. You can do that on the card already. So that's good. So I do that. And because I'm a halfway decent person, and I've been wearing my mask when I go out. There's people that are wearing their masks. There's some people that aren't. This Delta variant is coming, even if you got vaccinated. But you're not going to die if you get it and you're vaccinated. And then it's just saying, like, I just read something this morning, like at, 2 o'clock, that said if you have the Pfizer shot or the AstraZeneca, it, you know, staves off the Delta variant. So get vaccinated, folks. Don't be like DeAndre Hopkins from the Arizona Cardinals. Don't be a jackass like him. We could have been past this if everybody did what they were supposed to do. You know, a year ago, we did not have a vaccine, and we lost hundreds of thousands of people, probably more than that. listen to the black guy who tips for all that info, all the details. But my goodness, you know, we could be doing a lot better. I'm hoping it doesn't impede on any of the things that I'm doing. And I don't know. I just don't want it to shut down again, because we live in this capitalistic society, and I'm one of those worker bees that is in this capitalistic society. So I'm just hoping that, you know, we can all maintain. But what are you going to do? Was there anything else that I wanted to say? The shows here have been good. I was doing this new bit about my parents, about them being older. And the bit is basically I'm an asshole for not having patience. I just set the joke up with them being old, because my dad is 80, my mom's 78. And the crowd was like, oh, they were, because I guess they were all old. I was like, it's not like I told them, I was like, I don't have anything against old people. You're just old. I mean, when I was born, I was a child, and now I'm much older from when I was a child. There's no indictment on you guys. But I had fun with them on that last night. But there have been some good shows, good crowds, and things seem to be, I mean, you know, working. It's just as things seem to be coming around, then, you know, people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. I still see commercials with, you know, people trying to get folks to get vaccinated. I'm getting these spam texts about getting vaccinated and all that stuff. And I just wrote back, my family's vaccinated. You know, we're doing our job. Is there anything else? I think that's it, guys. I think I just want to get you guys to Gordon. Gordon and I had this conversation a couple weeks ago. I had it in the can. It was just good to catch up with him. You know, we're in a text chain and stuff, but it's a lot better when you can just do the one-on-one conversation and just kind of shoot the shit. And it's just two comedians shooting the shit and talking a little bit about the craft and talking a little bit about life. So I really hope you enjoy my conversation with the very funny and very talented Gordon Baker Bone. So how you been, man?
I've been good. Doing a lot of traveling. I've actually been doing less shows. I've been saying no a lot to people.
Really?
Yeah. I've been like, because like COVID, I don't know. I got into this new habit of liking where I live and not trying to break my neck to go do like a $20 spot for places. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I feel you. How, cause you were, weren't you in, where are you now? Where are you living now?
I was in Newark. I no longer have roommates anymore. I'm living on my own. So I moved to East Orange for a year to save money. And then after saving money, I'm also house hunting right now. So I'm looking to buy a house. So.
Oh, dope. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Finally saved up some cash. So now it's time to make that jump.
Do you still want to stay in Jersey?
Oh, yeah. I don't think I'm going to leave Jersey at all. I think I'm a vacation and go different places, but I don't want to leave Jersey. I love New York. I love being around New York and working in New York. But to me, it's always been like my backyard.
Yeah.
And I say like my backyard because like I grew up in Newark, and literally my backyard was the view of New York. So it was just like I always treated it like a place that you can go have fun and play. But no, I don't think I ever want to live in New York again. I lived in Queens for like 2 years, and then that was okay, but it wasn't a big deal for me.
It's always been a running theme since I started this podcast. Every time I talk to somebody from Jersey and living here myself for almost 14 years, I love it.
It gets such a bad rap, and it feels like people that move here, they always, especially in New York, people that move to New York, they feel like they have to like kind of shit on New York, shit on New Jersey, because they're like, oh, you guys don't know anything. And then like years later when they see what New Jersey is, they're like, oh, I want that.
Yeah, it's funny, man, because it's just like I grew up in the burbs, like suburban DC, and again, yeah, like mentioning a major city as your playground. It's like I went to school there for a number of years, okay, go on class trips and see the monuments and stuff like that. Yeah. And but I was, you know, home. But like here now, being a grown up, it's like I always say, I live my dreams in New York City, and then I just go home to Jersey.
Exactly. That's the whole point. I guess like people that don't live in the city or been to the city or visited the city before, once they get here, they're like, this is it. I can't leave here. I can't leave here unless I do something. So I'm like, all right, just good luck to you. Because after a while, like watching people swim through the subway 2 weeks ago, no, like a couple of days ago,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like, I couldn't imagine myself doing that. There's no place I need to be that bad that I would trudge through 3 feet waist deep water.
Yeah, what kind of person does that? I don't get it. Like, my dad was asking me. I said, I don't know. Like, I mean, you could take a bus. You could just take the bus. It's not that serious. You know,
like, how bad do they need to get out of Harlem? Like, there was no reason.
It's white now. It's really white,
dude. It's because I was trying to think. I was like, how much were the Ubers at the time? Were they surging to like 10%? Why? There's nothing to do to walk through that shit.
I don't get it. And it's just like, yeah, it's fun, but like talking to guys like you and Justin Williams, you know, it's just like I never want to leave Jersey. Like unless I have to work. I'm echoing on your end, I think.
Am I? Wait, are you?
I can hear myself on your end echoing.
Okay.
I don't know if what that means.
Let me see. Let me see if I could.
We'll edit this part out.
All right, cool.
Or maybe not.
Hold on. Okay. Let me see if I can do this.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, cool.
Oh, you're golden now.
All right, cool.
Okay. All right. Yeah, just like talking to you and because you really grew up here and Justin is a transplant just like me. And yeah, it's like I was like, okay, you guys can have it. You guys can have it that you live in New York City, that you got that address. But I'm good over here, dog. It's really nice. It's like you can, when you have to gig upstate New York or something, you can just shoot on up. If you got to get to Pennsylvania, you could just shoot over to PA.
Yep.
You could either shoot west or you could shoot down to Philly. It's great.
I know everybody's going to like say I'm a homer, but I really, really appreciate my area. I used to have a image of, all right, as soon as I get enough money, I'm going to move super far away. And then when I got to college, I was like, oh, there's no place. Like I went to Wilberforce University out in Ohio, which is Xenia, Ohio, and going from Newark to Xenia, Ohio, it made me realize, oh, like the lifestyle that I'm used to, even at 18, I'm just like, I need that fast pace. I need that kind of city lifestyle. And you don't have to live in the city to have that lifestyle. You just have to be close to it. Cause like, I'm literally 15 minutes away from World Trade Center on a PATH train. And a lot of people think that I live like hours and hours away. And people that live in Coney Island are like, oh, I'm in the comedy scene. I'm like, dude, you are the last stop on the train.
People always say, people early on would say, hey, Chris, yeah, next time you're in town, you can do my show. I'm like, I'm in town. I'm a New York comic. I just live it. Hey, one of the greatest to ever do it, Patrice O'Neill, lived over here. Really? So if it was good enough for him, it's good enough for me. Look, I was talking to Neruda Williams. His episode is currently up this week, and he's from Harlem. And we were just talking about it. It's like, hey, people are trying to like make it out of the hood, and making it out of out of the hood for a lot of places is moving to Jersey. A lot of cats was trying to get over here, and it's like, you know, and it's not that far away. It's a hop, skip, and a jump away.
It's so close. Like I, when Patrice lived over in Jersey, because I talked to Vaughn about it, they lived in Society Hill, which is right downtown North, right down the street from Arts High School. Actually, his daughter went to Arts High School.
Okay.
And that's a very prestigious school. Like for those that don't know anything about Arts High School, that's where Tisha Campbell went. That's, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Michael B. Jordan also went there.
Okay.
So, and it's.
Where did Zach Braff and Lauryn Hill go to the same school?
Yes, that's the school I went to. Zach Braff, Lauryn Hill, SZA, the assistant coach from the Suns, Mark Bryant, all went to Columbia High School. That's where I went.
Okay.
My mom, when I got to eighth grade, it was either I went to one of the specialty schools in Newark, which is like Arts High, University High School, and there's a couple of others, and I think there's a tech school. I either went there or went to private school. So my mom was like, "No, you're moving." We're like, "We're moving." So she moved us literally to the edge of Maplewood. Like if I walked one block, I'm in Irvington. If I walk another block, I'm in Newark. So, but like it was where the three towns met, and we lived there. So I can go to Columbia High School, which is a great high school. The only problem with Columbia High School, it's a the running joke is like, if you go to any school that says we're diverse, it means you're not very diverse. You got a lot of racial problems. So we, Columbia High School, great school. But like it still was, they had levels to it, and they put like kind of all the black kids on the lower level and shit like that. And the white kids were supposedly tested higher and higher levels, but it wasn't the case. And they, they've had like news stories about it. But Columbia High School, dope high school. Jersey is, I call it like the Wakanda that no one knows about, because we have so many stars come out from there. Shaq is from Newark, Queen Latifah. The Fugees, all from New Jersey, like Maplewood, East Orange, and Newark. Just countless people that live around here. And I think it's a great place to be. And to like, especially if you're aspiring to be something like great, I think this is like an area that you can start out with and you can get that urge and that push.
Yeah, the arts, they're always like pushing the arts, and there's always cool stuff. Like that show Michael Che had at what the hell was that place, the Luna Stage? Where was that?
That was that was in Orange.
Wait,
is Che from Jersey?
I know he, I don't think he's not originally, but he used to live in Jersey. He used to live in Jersey City a while, like when right around the time, because he and I started around the same time, like 08 09 ish.
Okay.
Yeah, but like he used to have that monthly show, and you used to have a great show at Hat City Kitchen.
Yeah,
that was that West Orange?
That's actually Orange. I was actually probably less than a mile away from Hat City Kitchen and Luna Stage, less than a mile away from each other's right.
Okay.
Right in the valley of Orange, which is a very nice area, which I highly suggest people.
That place was the shit, dude.
Oh, dude, it's.
And the food was good too.
Oh, bro, I miss it so much.
Is it gone? Like, is that place gone?
Hat City Kitchen is still open. Luna Stage is still there. My 10th Street show, that bar that 10th Street was on, they closed down. They got too many complaints from the city because they were saying, "Oh, it's too many people coming there."
But too many black people.
Yeah,
because that place Kenilworth was like. That's like a super ritzy area. Is it rich or like?
It's not rich. It's not rich at all. It's the most middle class of towns. It's like, it's a white town that carries itself as a ritzy area, but it's just like, oh, you guys just have a 401k.
Because it's kind of that wealthy. Place. It's kind of like you. It's like a normal, like a standard issue normal town, and you make that right onto where Hat City. I mean, onto where 10th Street is.
10th Street West.
It's kind of. It's kind of. Kind of hood.
Yeah.
And if you take that, if you go out, it's a Walmart right there. That's like
right there.
A hood ass Walmart. And it's like, what are you talking about? And that place is tucked away. That's like kind of like in a, it's a semi-industrial area, but there are like houses and stuff over there. But that place was never that loud.
No, but
except
like,
when I had to tell people to, I had to tell people to shut the fuck up during your album taping. I was like, what the fuck are we doing, man? I can't stand that. That was my big gripe about that place. Sometimes they would just keep the TVs on and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people, I got used to that because that was like the one negotiating chip that I had with the bar staff. Uh-huh. It was like, all right, I'm going to have this open mic and shows here. And they were like, all right, we'll shut them off for the shows. But like, if the whole place is not here for the comedy, can we just leave the TVs on? And like, I was like, can you mute it? And they were like, all right, cool. So it would be a muted TV.
Yeah.
So if you really want to watch Baywatch on mute, I guess this is the place for you.
Oh my God. That place was great. You had some great shows there. I always had fun whenever I was there. Cause it's always like, for me, it was always a treat to do something in Jersey.
Because
you know it's going to be parking. You don't have to, like, I spent years like just driving over to Brooklyn to do like 8 minutes and
looking for parking for an hour.
Yeah, and having to pay for everything. And you go there, you go to Brooklyn somewhere, you're like, God damn it. Thank you, Lena Dunham. It's her fault. It's not really her fault, but I blamed her for.
Oh, you should. No, blame her. Always blame her. Always blame Lena Dunham. Like she drove everyone to think that living in Brooklyn's cool. Smoking crack is cool.
I don't want to put it all on her, but yeah.
She smoked so much crack on that show.
Did she?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Oh, like towards the end, I think. Yeah.
That's funny. Is so weird.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you've been, I saw you had a really great picture of you up in, were you up in Maine or where were you?
No, I was up Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
Block Island, which a lot of people don't know exists. It's an island probably an hour by ferry off the coast of Rhode Island, maybe an hour and a half from Montauk. Gorgeous island that no one knows exists.
Well, I should say
minorities don't know it exists, but I did a show out there. It is phenomenal. Shout out to the dude, Ben Smith. It was my second time being out there. This was the first time I was able to like travel around and like tape and show people to where I was. But the reason I love doing comedy so much, and it gives me a chance to travel and see new places and still work. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of jobs give you that opportunity. And whenever I get like a chance to go somewhere new, I go like maybe a day or at least 12 hours early so I could take in the environment. So I could actually know where I'm at and get comfortable and familiar with the area. And
that's like that's real.
One of those great places. Yeah.
That's real. Cause I've never been, I did a show in at the Providence Mall once in a Dave and Buster's. But I mean, the fascinating thing about that was that mall had carpet all around the fucking mall.
Wow.
That was just kind of weird and interesting to me.
Yeah.
That's all I remember about that. I had a good set or whatever, but other than that, it was, you know, but that's to speak on that a little bit, like going to a place and actually taking it in. And then do you feel like that enhances your set? Like when, you know, after you've done that?
I feel like it does because most of the crowd is from that place. So even if like you don't have to do jokes about the area.
Right.
But you get a kind of understanding of the people that you're going to be entertaining. Because no matter where you are, you're going to get, like, you have to understand who's coming to see you. Mm-hmm. It's not always your crowd. So you need to know kind of like a background of who you're talking to and understand why they are coming out and what kind of jobs they have and things like that. So I do that at Block Island. I did that when I went to Germany. I did that when I went to the UK. I really enjoy learning about different areas, I guess, because like I living in Newark, in Jersey, like I have to entertain the whole state. But mm-hmm. New Jersey is one of these places where each town has a different demographic. So yeah. you have to know why. All right. I live 10 miles away from you guys. You guys want to come to a show in Newark. Why is that? Oh, you guys are scared of Newark. Let me like break into like why you guys, like why you think your town isn't scary and stuff like that. So I do that and I try to take in the environment because I think it helps your overall performance.
Yeah, because you're a mainstream act and you're a type of comic that I think, like myself, I don't see you changing your set to benefiting. I think you just are who you are.
Yeah.
And you don't change it. How
it's
did you
weird now?
how did you like, I don't know, like just did you just get settled into that? Where or did you have to learn?
I had to learn. Okay. I had to learn that you can't cater to everybody. You have to be yourself no matter what. And I think it makes you a stronger comic to be able to be confident in who you are as a comic, as an artist, to be up on stage and to be able to speak your voice in front of whoever. It irritates the hell out of me when I see comics catering to different crowds.
Yeah.
Like you see white comics come out and it'd be like half black, half white crowd. And they're like, oh, I got to change everything. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's an equal crowd. No, just be yourself.
Yeah. And
it's a lot of my whole thing is sincerity. It just be who you are no matter what.
Yeah, I had a gig in Albany on Friday night, this past Friday, and I was opening for a band. It was all white. I think I may have been the only black person there. And the guys were really nice. It was like a 9-piece band, this band called the Nolanauts. And it was like in downtown Albany, which is kind of hood.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize. Like, I'd been to Albany before, but it's like certain areas. Like, oh, this is like DC. This is like Southeast. This is like Northeast. This is like back home or whatever. And the guys were like, you're going to be performing in front of all these white people. And I was like, they're kind of my people. Middle-aged white people. And I didn't change my shit. And at the end of the show, I saw these two black women leave and they were like, oh, we enjoyed you. I was like, bet. I was like, I know I did a good job. Cause if you have like black women, middle-aged black people, if they're not shaking their heads at you at the end of your set, then you know you did your job. You didn't change anything. You just did what you had to do. You just did your job.
I recently, this past year, 2020, February 2020, I had this black woman super upset with me. She was like, you kept saying nigga on stage. And I was like, wait, what are you talking about? She was like, you weren't saying it at anybody, but you said like this nigga. And I was like, oh yeah, that's like kind of the way I talk.
Yeah.
And she was like, but my white friends kept looking at me every time you said it. I'm like, well, you need better friends.
Well, yeah, that's your insecurity. That's her insecurity. Like, it's one of those, I'm talking about, like, if you're making the room laugh, you've done your job. Yeah. You had a great set. You killed. And you didn't coon it up.
And yeah.
The black people, because I did this casino gig. I did this casino gig in Delaware in late 2019. And and it was like only a black couple, just a middle-aged black couple, had a good set, but I saw them laughing. I was like, I'm good.
Yo, that's more fulfilling than anything else.
Yes.
Like I do I do the Decepticomic shows. Mm-hmm. I do these mainstream shows. Like, I do predominantly.
You do everything.
Any show you, yeah. So people always ask me that question, like, how are you able to perform in front of everybody? I'm like, that's the point of being a comic. Like, you don't just do it for one group of people. You do it for everybody.
Yeah.
So, like, Vera Daz comes to Jersey or is in the East Coast, he always asks me to open for him. Because, like, I talk about dating South Asian women, and he likes it. And he's like, all right, cool, just come through. So my whole point with that is just, like, it just makes me very uncomfortable when I see comics that can't perform in front of everybody. And it hurts.
Now, I've mentioned on the show how I feel uncomfortable or angry about certain things. Yeah. How do you feel as a veteran comic? How long have you been doing comedy?
Coming up on like 13 years now. 13, 14 years.
Yeah. So I'm at 12, and I don't know if you noticed this, and I'm going to be open up to you, and I have these human moments.
Okay.
How do you feel when you see people that are working at the Comedy Cellar that shouldn't be working there?
Wow. That is. I understand why they're there.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for, I don't even know why I'm trying to be political about it. It is kind of disheartening.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but it also, it makes me happy because I know I'm not dancing for anybody that I don't like. I'm not trying to play a role to get in somewhere. I'm like, all right, bro, but I'm not, that's not how I want to get in there. Like, I want to feel good when I put my head on the pillow. Like, I hate the idea of not giving my all or playing a role to mm-hmm. get in somewhere. Yeah. I don't want to be, I want to feel like if I get the opportunity to be in the Cellar, I want to know that when I'm there, everyone in the room, one, respects me.
Yeah.
Number two, knows I deserve to be there. And it shouldn't, I don't want anyone to ever look over and see my name on any building, but like, what the fuck is he doing here? Like,
I don't think they won't ever do that, Gordon. You're one of the greats. I don't think they'll do that, man.
Well, I appreciate that, but it's just like, I see names up there and I'm just like, huh.
This has got to get to, because like people think they know me, like, oh, Chris is a nice guy, but I'm honest, but I sometimes I see it, I just be like, God damn. But then, but it's like, how did this motherfucker, like, wow. Even on shows that don't pay, you're looking at like, how the fuck?
Oh, bro, I see the game. It is a game at a certain point. And a lot of it, to me, it's, and I hate to even say this because it's even cliche, it's kind of turning into like high school politics. I'm just like, oh, you're the popular kid now. Or all the younger kids think you're the cool guy. So they're going to push you to that spot and because everyone's buzzing about you. So it's just like, okay.
Yeah.
But like my whole thing is, and with anything I do, I'm gonna get my all. I've been kicked off of shows because I did too well.
Real talk I've about had, that.
Oh, Christopher Titus and Sean Wings.
Okay, let's do this.
Two names that like I've done my set and then after my set didn't do bad. They just like the manager or the owner of the club walks over to me and goes, hey, you're not going back up next show. And you're like, what do you mean? They're like, oh, you said you did too well. So here's your check. And we'll try to figure out another date for you.
You got paid like, for the whole weekend?
Yeah.
Where was this? You can't, can you say where it was? Or
I'm not going to say I'll say one. One of the places was at Stress Factory. I did like, Chris, when I tell you, I've been to Stress Factory multiple times.
That's like your home, kind of like your home club in a way, right?
Yeah. So I remember I got a laugh so big. And this is when I knew the waitstaff there. Like, the waitstaff was cool with me. I got a laugh so big. Like, the waitstaff locked eyes with me. Like, two or three different people looked up at me like, what did you do? Like, I broke something on stage. Oh. It erupted. And they looked at me like, oh, no.
And you were, who were you opening for? Was it Christopher?
I was opening for Sean Wayans at the time. And they stared at me like, what the fuck did you do? And like the crowd, it was, you ever got a laugh so big that like you didn't know when to start back up again?
Yeah.
Because there's like, yeah. So you're like, oh, okay. All right.
And you don't remember the joke?
I don't remember the joke. I just remember the feeling.
Yeah.
And then going, all right. And I was hosting. And then I had to bring up.
Wow.
I had to bring up his feature. And then the feature did okay.
Couldn't follow you.
Not really.
Yeah.
And then he went up and it didn't. And I remember, and this is a little sucky thing. Like they came over to me because I was sitting at the bar and the manager at the time, Mark, came over to me and was like, hey, the next show, we're going to only have you do half a set. And I'm like, all right. And then he came back over to me again. And after a while, like 10 minutes later, he goes, hey, we might not even have you do a set. We're just going to have you do announcements. And I go, what? Mm. Oh, okay. And then he goes, all right, you're not going to do announcements. You're just going to bring up the feature.
Oh, man. You were killing on the announcements?
I don't even know. No, I've been doing the announcements. This is before we even got to the second show. He just kept walking over to me.
Kept walking
and
back.
Kept just demoting me each time going, nah, you're not. And then the last time he just goes, you know what? You're not even going to go up. He called his manager. His manager called his whoever, and whoever called the club and the owner, and was like, he can't, like, you can't go up again. And but we'll pay you. Just hang out. We'll pay you. So, and the thing that made me mad is like I had to wait through the second show to get the check, and then the like Sean Wayans came out, and it was the most ugh feeling I've ever had in my life. He walked over to me. He had shades on, and mind you, it's dark. It's like
it's
11 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
it's dark. The lights are out, and I'm sitting by the bar. And he came over and he gave me this flimsy handshake, like royalty. That's like he stuck his hand out. And it was kind of limp, and we go, hey, man, yeah, you kind of was stepping on my toes. So, yeah, that's the reason I had you go back up. And then just walked off. And I remember that feeling of like, damn, I used to watch you on TV. I'm like, yeah, I kind of be like that. And I'm just like, and now I'm just like, ugh.
What did you say? What could you say? Did you say anything?
I didn't say anything. I was just like, And he just walked off. And then like a couple weeks later, like, this is why I love doing comedy, because a couple weeks later, Sinbad come to town and they have me feature for Sinbad. Mm-hmm. And then Sinbad had me come back up on stage after my set and was just on stage with Sinbad for like 35, 40 minutes, just riffing. And
I remember that picture Sinbad. You took.
That shit was amazing. And it's just like, I would have every single last Sean Wayans icky moment to have like weeks later to be around somebody that you know and respect go, hey, I like what you're doing.
Real recognizes real. That's why, like, I mean, even like at my low level, when I headlined Caroline's, I had you come, I had Courtney come.
I appreciate that, bro. Yeah,
motherfuckers that could, cause I wanted to be on my toes. Like, you don't, you, I mean, this, I fucking hate that shit.
Like old heads be saying, steel sharpens steel,
iron sharpens iron, steel sharpens steel. Like you want to get better. I was just talking to my dad about the, like, he was like, oh, I don't know if you should talk about X on stage. I was like, I'm gonna talk about it because I want to talk about what I feel. You know, he was trolling me, but I was just like, I'm an artist, and that's why if you want to be great, I was like, when I was a kid, I want you to tell me a Paul Mooney story. I used to listen to Paul Mooney, Martin Lawrence all the time in his car while he was driving me around. And it was like, if I want to be half as good as those dudes, I got to try this shit. I got to go for it. Like, you can't. That's why people pay to see comedians.
Yeah. To like for someone to push it and to be great.
Yeah.
And it's funny. Oh, God.
That's why I wanted to have. This is one of the main reasons I wanted you on. I want to stay in this realm about this bullshit where this insecurity that these comedians have. Cause I have a story where I was at Levity Live. Okay. I consider to be my home club. Like, even though they're fucking corporate now, but it's still when they were working out, like that's how I got, like, I feel like I got stronger working, opening for people, hosting shows and all that stuff. Yeah. And I credit all praise due to Steve Mazzilli. Yeah. And so there was one night where Steve texts me, he's like, hey, can you just kind of be on call? Can you come to the club? The Wayans brothers have they're coming in, and Will Sylvence was supposed to be hosting, but he's on a plane or he's might be late. And he just come up, I'll get you dinner. You could, the worst case scenario, you get dinner and you can watch the show. I was like, bet. Yeah, I love the Wayans brothers. So Will actually gets there and he hosts the show. And it was not a good show. It was not a good show. And I was walking out because I grew up like you. I love that show. I love Wayans brothers. Yep. I love those dudes. I was walking out. I didn't say this, but you know, you walking out with the crowd and somebody said that was the worst show I've ever seen.
The best place to hang out, if anybody just listens to this podcast, if you really want to know what a crowd thinks about a show after the show, just stand by the exit on the way out, because you'll hear murmurs of what people thought about the show. Mm-hmm. I've had people like, hey, you were better than a headliner. And I'm like, oh, you bullshitting, like, yeah, this, yeah, whatever. And then after a while, you realize, no, they did not like the headliner.
Yeah.
They despised it, and they can't believe that they paid for that. But they're like, all right, I kind of came away with knowing, like, this new guy exists. So kind of a win-lose situation.
Yeah, and it's one thing, like, I'm trying to think who said it, but, like, you know, a feature act, you know, you get less time, there's less stress that you have, but sometimes you mm-hmm. are better than the headliner, and we know how that is, and it's yep. you just kind of take it with a grain of salt. But there's this theory that I have about being a above average comic, being a really good comic living in New York and New Jersey, if you're not famous. Like, if yeah. you're not like we're guys at 12, 13 years in, 14 years in. We're very good. I'm not trying to be like arrogant. We are.
You're not being arrogant at all. You.
It is what it is. You know, there's footage, there's audio footage, there's video footage of it. We're not lying. When people come, when touring comics come here, a lot of times they don't realize how, like, you're close to New York City, and these people mm-hmm. like us have earned our stripes gigging all over the tri-state area. So if you come somewhere like Levity Live, this is not Indiana.
Nope.
It's not Indiana where you have some feature, or even fucking Connecticut, dude.
Yeah.
It's not where you have, because I've seen it happen where you go to a town and the headliner's there, and you get a powder puff host who might talk about some local shit. You get a feature that's not very good, and the headliner kills. And most of their travels are like that. But then when you run into somebody like us, it's a little different. And I've been told, like, I haven't gotten kicked off a show, but I've been told, like, oh yeah, you were hosting the show, but I felt like you should be at least featuring. So I wanted you to open for me my next time around. So I had people say that to me, but I think that's like my theory, dog. Cause it's like, they think we on some powder puff shit. It's like, no, I've fucking been on TV. I have acting roles and stuff. I have credits, but I'm hosting for you because it's a pretty good check. It's just, yes. it's a check, and I can, like, buy some groceries. But dude, I love doing stand-up.
That's the thing. I love doing stand-up. And if I do anything else, it's to support me continue doing stand-up.
Yeah.
A lot of people go, so what else are you going to do? And, like, outside of, like, my own projects, mm-hmm. like developing, like, shows like Drunk Black History and my side project that I'm currently working on and filming at BHM, Other than that, like besides being behind the camera,
doing
stuff like that, there's, I have no real yearning to be in front of the camera like that. I used to think like, oh yeah, I'll be a comedy star, like a comedy actor. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, but I would much rather develop something like a film or something like that. But like, I love stand up. There's a certain joy I get out of stand up. I have lost relationships because of how much I've had exes say to me, "You don't smile like that when you're with me." And I go, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "No, when you're on stage, you're genuinely happy.
Yeah.
I don't do that for you." And I go, "No, you don't."
It's over, Gordon. Oh man. Yeah.
Oh, but it, like, yeah, man. It's oh my, I can't describe how much I love doing stand-up. And the reason why I feel like I go so hard with it is because of the love of it. And like listening to like all like these eldermen in comedy, they used to tell me, like some people used to tell me, don't do better than the headliner. You'll never go anywhere. And I'm like, then I'd rather not go anywhere. I'd much rather make sure my jokes work and then to hold hat in hand and be like, did you like me? I'm like, no, I want the crowd to be like, all right, this dude deserves to be here.
Yeah. And you want to kill like the people, like you want to have a good set. You want to do the best that you can do. And if the guy, if that guy's getting paid, some or woman who's getting paid to follow you and headline, that's on them to do the work.
Do the work.
And people are paid to go see them. I'm just trying to have a good set. Like it might be another night for you doing this theater, but this is like Letterman for me or whatever the fuck. This is my shit. I'm trying to eat too. I just really think, man, I think that that's kind of what happens when some of these people come to New York and like the tri-state area. When you get a gig to open for somebody, you be excited. Like, I'm gonna get some bread this weekend, some extra bread, and you know, and that's, I might get a new polo shirt to, you know, run out some sneakers or some shit. Like you know, spend the money or something. But like, you trying to get busy. I'm listening to fucking rap music on the way to the club. I'm not like, nigga, I'm listening to MF Doom trying to like eat.
Oh my, I like, you know, I'll admit this. The song that gets me amped up for a show, it, like a lot of people think I listen to like hardcore rap before I go do a show, like Meek Mill's Dreams and Nightmares. Yeah. I actually listen to Beyonce's Get Me Body. That is
whatever
my
it
shit.
Takes, dog. Whatever it takes. Like I told the story on the show before, but I listened to one of the best sets that I ever had. Two situations. One, I was at the Borgata, the night before, the right before the last show, Eric Roberson was doing a show at Kelsey's. You ever been to Kelsey's down there in AC?
Yeah.
Great food. He did a gig there, and he had an early show. I went to that show and just watched him. He's such a beast, such a great performer. I had one of the best sets. He's an R&B dude. Yeah. You know, like I had a great set after I was just like inspired by watching him. And another joint was like Hiatus Coyote. They're like this Australian neo soul type of band. Yeah. Anyway, white Australian people doing some R&B shit. And right. I listened to them on the way to a gig and had a good time. But like, for the most part, it's like that fucking like old school Common and a little bit of Hov, Little Brother, all of those dudes. Like, I'm Most Def. I'm trying to kill
Little Brother. All right.
You know, but like, it just makes me mad when they when you get underestimated.
Oh
no! Like,
it's like easy for people to underestimate you, and it like, because like to hold you to an expectation is I think is difficult. It's like, all right, he ain't gonna do nothing, because like I think they underestimate because they want to be surprised. Mm. They want to see something out of you. They want to be in awe. So
yeah, some guys are good. Some headliners are like, oh, what if you did this tag, or what if you tag that they actually watch your set? But some of that shit, man, I was like,
Lil Rel was one of those dudes that did that for me. Like Lil Rel was, he was the only comic that I could say like was headlining Kill Crush and gave like props. And he was like, yo, thank you for like, don't like, he really came out. I was like, yo, you was out there working. I like that. Like now I got to go out there and like really work. I'm like, oh shit. Like it mm-hmm. feel like you made the dream team. And you don't feel like just the last pick. You actually earned to be there, to be around Bird and Magic and shit like that. Like you don't want to be like Christian Leitner out there. You want to be out there working.
Yeah. And you're not that far from him. I mean, he's gotten some breaks and he's a very talented comic. But it ain't really that far off.
Oh man, I can't. Ugh, I'm working.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, thank you, and I appreciate that. Like, you know what? I gotta start accepting when people give me compliments more. Like, especially peers like yourself, people that I respect, people that I know are good. Like, and they tell me that, like, oh damn, you're good. I'm like, like I get this all shucks goofy moment. Like, oh there. Yeah. But now I'm learning how to say thank you to that.
Yeah, we got to give each other the flowers, man. It's just it is, especially after, I mean, we're still going through COVID, but it, you know, if you got vax, you're kind of okay, you know,
kind of,
you know, you're okay. Like, I mean, even with the Delta variant, I mean, I keep seeing these stories, you know, as of today, July 11th that we're recording, you know, 12:53 in the afternoon. But no, it makes you think about stuff, but I just have a hard time. That's one thing that just kind of gets under my skin is like people, whether it's race related, people underestimating you, think you can't do something. And then you're just like, well, I'll just have to fucking show you. And you constantly have to do that with this art form.
It's, yeah.
You're never as good as your last.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah. But tell me a Paul Mooney story, because I immediately thought about you, because there was when he passed away, and I think I was talking about him on one episode. I was like, yeah, I was actually going to see Gordon open for him at Levity Live, but the show got canceled.
I have a few Paul Mooney stories.
Go for it.
I've seen Paul Mooney quite a bit of time. Early in my career, I got to open for Paul Mooney, and it was accidental. There was a comedy club trying to form in, I guess, Sayreville, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And it was this nice, big place. And I just went to go see. I actually paid to get in to go see Paul Mooney. And I went with my friend, and we were sitting there, and somebody was like, Gordon, you're here. And I'm like, yeah. And it's like, you want to go up? I'm going to go like do a set. And it was like, yeah. So I'm sitting backstage and Paul Mooney's there. He shows up late. Mm-hmm. And I did my set. He wasn't in the crowd. I did my set and the show started late. Paul Mooney had scheduled that he should have been on stage, I think by 9, and they put it on me and some other comics just because, like, I guess they kind of thought it was going to be more of a draw to have multiple comics on, or to give like New Jack spots and stuff like that. So, and Paul Mooney shows up and he's sitting in the hallway and he's just like, gentlemen, I told you 9 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock. I'm getting on stage. And he's like, no, we still got other acts that got to go on before you. He's like, no. My contract said 9 o'clock. I don't fuck around with you niggas.
That's a pretty good Paul. That's a pretty good Paul. I didn't know you did like, impressions.
I don't do impressions, but I just, his voice sticks out in my head.
Sure.
Every single time I see him. And he walks on stage. He had like, before anyone even had like statues and shit, he had designer like statues, and he would just walk on stage and sit down and do a set. So I'm watching him on stage. And this is, I guess this is around the time of Negro Domus still being aired a lot. So the crowd is predominantly white and he's doing his sets, and he's doing a joke about white people calling black people monkeys. But if you really look at a monkey, monkeys look more like white people because they have thin lips. You've never seen a nappy head monkey. What do white people say? If I'm not a monkey's uncle, it's like, you never heard niggas say that. And I remember a white family getting irate at that joke. And this dude got so mad. He's calling, like, he's in a crowd. He's trying to storm out. And he's like yelling at Paul Mooney. He's like, "You're a racist." He was like, "Look at you. Look at you. Let me call us by. Look at you, what you're doing right now." And the dude got, the white dude got so mad, he started unbuckling his pants in front of everybody. He's in a crowd. He's unbuckling his pants. And everybody's like, "What are you doing?" And like, he mooned Paul Mooney. And he's like, "Look at him." And like, I just remember going, "Damn, I've never been that mad at someone ever in my life that decided to show them my ass." And that was that one show. And then I got to open for him at Levity, which is the greatest experience. I was hosting, Monroe Martin was featuring.
Uh-huh.
This is the weekend of the Boston bombing.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
I remember that because I remember me and Monroe were sitting in the green room together and we're like, "Yo, this is crazy. We're about to open for Paul Mooney." And then like, he walks in, he sits in that head chair, like that, uh-huh, that recliner.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there and he's rocking back and forth and he's looking at the TV and he's talking about the bombing. And we're like, we're just sitting there listening. And he's like, it didn't sound like he was doing jokes. It just sounded like he was just like talking about what he's like seeing on TV. He's like, "Look at this white America. It's crazy. They talk about this boy. They showing his picture all the time. New soon they're going to have his girlfriend up on there saying that he cute, that he fuck good." And like, me and Monroe are laughing at it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, "Oh, this is ridiculous. Yeah, you right, Mr. Mooney." And then he goes out and he does that on stage. And unbeknownst to him or us, like, comedy clubs do fundraisers, and there was a police fundraiser in the crowd. And he does the joke about the Boston bombing. He does a joke about police officers being racist. He does even a joke about, like, how bad police are. Because I think when he found out there's a police fundraiser, he did a joke when he goes, "You know, police are like rapists." He's like, "You ever see a car on the side of the road and no one's in it?" He was like, "This is because cops pick those people up thinking they're going to help them, but they take them in the woods and go fuck them somewhere." And everyone's like, "Yo."
Oh, shit. Wow.
So I want to say about 175 people came for that fundraiser. And they all storm out. And as they're storming out, some are mad and they're waiting for this old man because they want to argue to his face or fight him because of what he said on stage. And I thought like he was just going to stay in the back in the green room, and he didn't. He came out to the front to sell his merchandise. And his merchandise, by far the most amazing thing I've ever seen. He had the club go next door to Target, buy Hanes t-shirts in extra large, large, and mediums. There's just plain white t-shirts, the tagless joints. He had a Sharpie, and he said, "If you want a Paul Mooney t-shirt, it is $25. If you want a picture with me on your phone and a t-shirt, it's $45. So basically, he was signing the shirt, Paul Mooney, and then holding up the t-shirt next to the person so you could take a picture. And he was charging all that money just for a plain white tee. It's the most gangster shit I've ever seen in my life. And he had people yelling and trying to fight him the whole time. I want to reach that level of not giving a fuck and being confident in every word you say and being unbothered.
That's crazy.
Paul Mooney's the greatest, in my opinion, the greatest comedian, because I wish to achieve that.
So what did they just cancel the they canceled the shows? Because
no, he did the second show, and then the next day, that was on Friday.
Okay.
Saturday, because he had to do two shows Saturday, two shows Sunday. Mm-hmm. They removed him. No, was that Thursday? Because he did Opie and Anthony the next day. Mm-hmm. And he was saying they kicked him off a stage, and like Levity was just saying like, "We didn't want that." Well, I didn't think it was Levity, but whoever it was like, "We don't want that problem. He caused too much of a ruckus. Like, we're in the news because of what happened." Like, so they removed him for the show, and it was just me and Monroe for the rest of the weekend. I got moved up to the feature. Moreau moved the headliner, and I think they brought in someone to host. And yeah, we did the rest of the weekend that weekend, and then to sold out crowds. It was just like, yo.
did he say anything to you guys? Like Paul, did he say? Was he cool? No.
Yeah, he was real cool. Like after that first show, he was like, yeah, it was wild. Like, yo, you're just talking about the boxing bump.
It just happened. Oh my God.
Still on TV. They're still looking for him. Shit.
Mark Wahlberg hasn't started prepping for the movie yet. And you just
Yeah, it was just like, oh wow. God.
That's
wow. But yeah, he had his business together. I tell you that, like, if you didn't get to see him behind the scenes, Paul Mooney was one of those people that he had his business together. Like he had his like staff. He knew how to work his contracts. And just if you say that I'm doing something, you're going to live up to it. And I think a lot of comics, like, I wish they could see that side of him. It wasn't just an act on stage. That was who he was on stage and off stage. That level of confidence, that level of no fear, not backing down. He did that with everything.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. That's a great story. Because I was like, I know Gordon's got a story.
Oh, yeah, bro.
What else is going on? How has it been with you? You do the drone stuff a lot. You kind of become a drone.
Yes.
How long have you been doing that?
This is now my fourth year of droning.
Okay.
I wanted to get a drone a long time. When it first came out, I like being behind the camera. I like watching people direct. I am a huge Hype Williams fan. I think he got a bad break when it came down to major films, but even with music videos, he revolutionized a lot of different things. He was somebody that utilized the letterbox camera shoot. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know what a letterbox camera shoot is, it means there's either a black or white bar on top, and then your main film in between. So it looked like a wide 16:9 view of what you're watching. So I watched him and got very influenced by directing and camera work. So because of that, I got into drone work, because it used to take millions of dollars to get on a chopper and shoot, or to set up a crane and make these vertical shots and these shots that you've never seen before. And now, because of technology in China, like, you can now attach a camera to a drone and see everything from a new view. 100 feet up makes the world seem gorgeous. So I bought a drone 4 years ago, and ever since then, I've just been flying wherever I go and just seeing the cities, the sights, and seeing something new about a city every place I go.
Do you ever get in trouble and shit with him?
Oh, yeah. I got in trouble. I got in trouble when I was out in Las Vegas. They said I was flying over a no-fly zone. Here's the thing with drones. For those that are interested in it, you have to register your drone. You have to know where you can fly, where you can't fly, and also get a license for commercial work. So at the time, I didn't have a license for commercial work. I was in Las Vegas for the AVN Awards, and I was just doing some B-roll. Oh yeah, the AVN Awards were crazy.
Talk about that. We'll finish that, and we'll get to the more important stuff.
All right. So I was flying for the AVN Award, B-roll for the AVN Awards. I went out to, and from what I know, I was wearing a pink hoodie, flying my drone, just standing in the middle of my hotel parking lot, looking up at the sky with a remote control in my hand. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the cops show up and go, "What are you doing?" And I'm just like, "Hey, can you give me a second? I have $1,000 drone in the air." And this is like pretty much protocol for when you get stopped by anyone while you're flying a drone. Like, "Hey, I'm registered. If you want to look at my registration, it's in my bag, yada, yada, yada. I'm bringing down my drone. Can I see it? It's right there. Let me just bring it right back down. Once it's down, we can go from there." So I do all that. I bring my drone down. I catch it in my hand. And they start questioning me and go like, "What are you doing out here?" I'm like, "I'm just flying my drone. I'm registered. Here's my registration number. I can show you all my other stuff." And at the time, I didn't have I showed them my registration, but I didn't have my ID because it's in my hotel room. I have my hotel key, and they they weren't really demanding of it. They just were like, it was a suggestion. And at the time, they was like, I was holding my drone. It was like, hey, you can put your drone down on our car. And I was just like, okay. Not even thinking. Once I put it down on their car, that's their property. They're allowed to touch it. So they took my drone, they repossessed it, and they were saying that I was flying in a no-fly zone, this and third. And I explained to the FAA at the time.
Damn.
Yeah.
Do you talk about this on stage?
Oh, no.
FAA? Not yet. God damn.
Yeah. So basically, like, there's so many people that if you don't know, like, your FAA laws, you can end up paying $20,000 for, like, minor infractions. But yeah. if you talk with them and explain what happened, they'll drop most of those fees. Like, mm-hmm. like, people are lazy and just want to fly. Mm-hmm. There's a guy right now from San Francisco. He landed on a fucking tarmac of a major airport because he lost control of his drone, and they charged him like $60,000, and he could have argued it, and he didn't. And now he has to pay $60,000 for a 2-minute flight. So basically they, I got so mad because they took my phone because it was attached to my remote, and they took my drone. And they were like, I was like, yeah, I can't be out here without a phone. You can take everything out. I can work that out. But I need my phone.
Right.
It's so, and it got really racial. This the police, the white, he wasn't white. He was wearing the white shirt. That's their supervisor. Mm-hmm. He said to me, he's like, well, you can get an Obama phone. I was like, yo, bro, I'm not broke. I don't know what an Obama phone is. It's weird that you do, but. I don't do that. And so I was like, I had to go through all that. I got my drone back. I got my footage back. I got an apology also. But like,
oh, wow.
Just, yeah.
How long did that process take? Like the rigmarole of
8 months.
Fuck.
To be real with you. Yeah.
To get your phone back?
Get my phone, my drone, and an apology back from everybody. Las Vegas are a bunch of assholes when it comes down to cops. And like, it was such a process because I had to fly back without a phone. And that's what made me mad because I had a ticket online. So all I had to do was show my phone and scan it and go through. So I had to go through a whole process of getting around Vegas and finishing the AVNs and just being professional, just doing the job and getting back home. But I did get some good footage out of it. If anybody wants to see it, I'll give you the link to it.
Oh yeah, so. Do that. Yeah, we'll yeah. So that's unfortunate and fucked up.
Yeah,
like I mean,
yeah, shit happens, yo. Like people tell me all the time, they're like, yo, you gotta remember, yo, you black with a drone.
Exactly, exactly. That's a bit. That's a chunk.
Yeah, I think I might have to. That's a chunk start talking about that.
Yeah, dude. You could easily. Now the more important stuff of not about the racist cops. What about the AVN? How did you
the AVN awards?
How did you get connected with them? And you did do something like, didn't you do like a convention, a porn convention?
Yes, I've done 2 porn conventions for Zaddy.com. Zaddy.com is a website that appreciates my comedy and my interviewing skills because I'm just not a weirdo with a microphone drooling over adult stars.
How do you navigate? Because I think I would be okay. Like they are hot.
Yes.
Like they're hot, but how do you just like
again, know your environment.
Yeah.
Go early, see what other people are doing, and try to not be that.
Yeah.
I've seen other people go to the AVNs and just ask the most basic questions, like, so what do you like in the bedroom? Like,
yeah,
bro, just look at the catalog. You know.
Have you ever interviewed somebody that you've seen before, like on the?
I I watch porn, but I do not know the stars the way other people do.
Yeah.
Like some people are on first name basis. And I'm so like when I come after when the interviews come out, people are like, I can't believe you talked to them. And I'm like, oh, that was the first time I met him. And
that's a couple. There's a couple that I've like I like know, like, because sometimes you kind of forget, like it's a part of your lizard brain when you're watching. Like, oh, she's so fucking hot. And then you try to think of if you try to think of them like outside of the, like you're like that girl. You know her. You know her scene, but you're just like But yeah, that's like another. That's definitely like another compartment that you. Oh, it, yeah. So you just like that, you just talk to them.
Just talk, and then like later on, I find out like their level of
fame,
and it gets. You go, oh, okay. And people will let you know.
Cause I think I hit you up one time. I was like, I can't believe you talked to her.
Yeah.
I don't remember the actress, but I was just like, I can't believe you talked to her, dude.
Oh my. It's a great experience. I think everybody should go to some adult convention. Mm-hmm. It's fun, it's interesting, and you realize it's not this terrible or skeevy place.
Yeah,
it actually is a convention like anything else. It's like a Comic-Con.
It's like Montreal or whatever.
Yeah, it really is. It's work for a lot of people, and you get to realize, all right, yeah, this is a business, and
yeah,
the important thing is to $1 billion
business industry. Dude. Yeah.
I tell people this all the time. I know you probably watch Pornhub. I know you probably watch X Video. But if you can, your favorite star, sign up for their OnlyFans. Like it's like anything else. Major companies don't pay their artists fairly, or it's a one-time fee. They don't get royalties on it. So if you actually buy directly from the artist, it helps them in the long run. So
yeah,
the same way you support anybody else, you should support them, because I me personally, like, you dude, you're fapping out to them, you might as well.
Oh man. Oh shit. Yeah,
but yeah, I at the AVNs, it was really cool.
Who books that, Gordon? How'd you book that? Dude, I don't care about Block Island. How did you book?
The first one I did the New Jersey Exotica.
Okay.
And after I did Exotica, they liked my interviewing skills, and like people noticed. My homie Ariel, she pointed out something that I was doing during like the interviews. Like I don't touch anybody at all.
Because, oh God, why would you?
People touch them? People will walk up and just grab ass.
Oh my God. Security's got to be heavy there, right?
Very heavy. Very heavy. So I'm interviewing this one star, and she's sitting on my lap. And if you look at the picture, like I keep my hand like hovered. It's not touching her leg. It's not touching her back, but it looks like my arm is around her, but it is not, but it's hovering the whole time. So I'm like, all right, I'm not, dude, you didn't, all right, you might be sitting here, but I'm not going to sit here and be all touching on you and shit like that. So and she was like, Gordon is he might be a wild person, but he's super respectful. And I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah, you're not an asshole. Yeah, he's a wild guy. You like to have a good time, but Gordon Cosby. Jeez. Gordon Baker Cosby.
Fuck it. Nobody want to be that dude. So
yeah, man. Yeah.
I try my best when I go out there, and like it. The weirdest thing I think I've done when I was out there was we got out there. We had to interview this producer that makes 3D porn. Oh. Not 3D. The what's the one with the goggles?
Oculus.
Yes.
Okay.
He makes Oculus porn, so it's like you're there.
Yeah.
So we're interviewing him and how he came up with that. Very smart dude. Went to a HBCU, lives out in Ohio, makes all his own money. He has this real Master P type feel to him. So I'm like, all right, cool. But he hates doing interviews. He hates being in front of the camera. So like before we do the interview, he goes, hey, yo, you mind if I drink while we do this? I'm like, yo, no, dude, do whatever that makes you feel comfortable. He's like, all right, cool. He's like, you mind if I smoke? And I go, dude, again, make whatever feel comfortable. And he's like, all right, the midway we do half the interview. And he goes, I don't feel comfortable still. Hey, you mind if I had the ladies like sit around me? I'm like, okay, sure. I think that looks good. So like the ladies, he's like, you mind if they have sex? He keeps upping it.
Oh, wow. Oh, that is okay.
So by the end of it, he's like, we negotiated down to them being topless as he does the interview and them making out, but no actual sex. I was like, all right, this is wild. So like I've been on set for a couple of shoots because I had to do interviews with people. Yeah.
What's that
like? It's like you're sitting in another room. And you like you're hearing them have sex, and you're just like, all right, I gotta interview that person once they're done. So,
oh, wow. Do you talk about any of this on stage?
Yeah, I talk about some of it. Like, okay, when I not everyone's into it, they have like a weird threshold with some of the crowd. So I'm just like, all right, I gotta figure out, where can I go and where I can't go.
Sure,
with it.
But that's the fun stuff in it. They'll tell you. Yeah, yeah, I know how you feel.
But it's a fun experience. I definitely highly suggest if you can get to Vegas, go to the AVNs. It's a great experience. You learn a lot. You see a lot, and you realize it's like because I really did have an image that these adult expos were pervy and a place that you didn't want to be. Don't get me wrong. It's some people that like that, but other than that, it's just like any other expo, bro.
Dude, people are like that at Hooters. I mean, I went to like they closed the one in Hackensack and Paramus, and I was in Albany, and so yesterday I was like, I haven't been to Hooters in a while. I'll get some takeout and have some, this weekend. And I'm sitting there at the bar, and it was one guy that it was a guy there who was just like, kind of being creep. Like it's just like, dude,
God. Yep.
It's like, yeah, these girls are super hot, but they're people, you know. It's just like,
yo,
I pick them up and stuff. It's just,
oh, that's the thing too. A lot of people that do interviews, they try to pick up on the artist, and like, it gets weird. The one time I did do an interview, and it felt like the artist was like flirting with me, and I was just like, nah, I had to keep going. Nah, stop. No, she wasn't, because like she exchanged information with me because I was just like, because I was just asking like sincere questions, and she was like, oh my god, that was a great interview. It was Kira Noir.
Yes, and yeah, you had a good one with her. She's one that I remember. And it was another girl that is a white girl with the big booty. And she now has like a weed tattoo on her arm. She used to didn't have one.
Wait, I think I know what you're talking about. I can't think of the name off the top of my head right now.
I can't either. See, that's the thing. Like, I wish I could know them like I know basketball players, but
I was asking them questions like, yo, do you play flip cup? What's your favorite game? Flip cup or Kings or beer pong and stuff like that. And it wasn't the typical everyday questions that they were getting. Like, I would do maybe one or two sex questions, and find out who they are as a person.
Right.
Before, instead of doing something like that. But Kira Noir was the one person that made me feel like, are you flirting with me right now?
What was she saying? That was a good interview you did. I just can't remember.
After the interview, she was like, so where are you hanging out later? And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to be going around doing interviews. She was like, well, you should go to this party. I'm going to be hanging out here. She's like, yeah, take down my information. I'm like, okay. And she's like, wait, are you? No. And I just had to like walk it off. I was like, nah, she was just being nice. She was just being nice. It was just one of those. That's the only interview that I've ever done. I was like, is she flirting with?
No. She might have been, dog.
No.
You don't think she was?
I don't think she was. I think she was just very nice.
Okay.
Hands down.
Because I probably would have just thought that too. But you never
know. Oh man. These I went to the Evil Angel after party that was in the hotel at the AVNs. And like it was more chill than I expected. I thought like it was gonna be like some Boogie Nights type shit, people having sex in the hallway as you walk up. But it was just like a real chill, cool environment, man. Just yeah, man.
That's fun,
I really suggest everybody should go out, check it out.
That is something, man. Cause you hell, the girl at the Mexican restaurant I was at Friday night was hot. You know what I mean? Like it's just they're all but you just, you know, it is what I don't want to get, we're not gonna get canceled from this. We can't get
no.
So what else is going on, man? You Black History, like you,
yeah,
you
guys, bro.
You did a big show.
We did the Bell House. We did a Bell House. We sold out. We were the with Juneteenth show.
A black show at the Bell House.
Yes. Which I did not realize was something that a lot of people don't do.
Yeah.
So I was just like, all right.
I think maybe Phoebe and Jessica. Queens. But other than that, like,
it's so surprising. I really love doing Drunk Black History. Yeah. It is the one. It's fulfilling to be able to do a show that is all black, that is educational, and that the crowd not only laughs at, but also walks away with new information and new knowledge. It's to me, it's helping people learn that Black history is just not a month. It reaches so many levels that people aren't understanding or thought about. Like one of the biggest things that we taught people is that Lonnie Johnson, the inventor of the Super Soaker, the toy that everybody in America and probably worldwide had, was a black man from NASA who invented the Super Soaker. And you had this and you never knew that this was provided to you by a black dude from Alabama who was the first black person to win a science fair. So it's deep. Yeah. So
and how long are you going to do? I know you guys did, but I went to the Black History Month in 2020.
Yeah.
Before the shutdown. And I was on the virtual one.
Yeah.
For Juneteenth. Are you guys going to do more live shows? Is it going to be like a seasonal thing or?
That's the plan. We're planning on doing more seasonal Drunk Black History shows. I think we might be doing one in October or November. So if you are into this, guys, just stand by. We're going to have more Drunk Black History coming. I am so excited because it's just it's amazing that a lot of people don't know Black history at all. Like Brandon gets mad because like I know a lot of black history and he's like, he's from the Midwest. And he's like, he always tells me like, yo, my school never taught us this. Like my school never taught me this either. But
yeah,
you know, they put like, you had to push and learn about this stuff. Like I had to teach him about the Divine Nine and the AKAs and deltas and stuff like that. Cause he had no clue. So we have an episode with, cause we do a podcast also,
right?
With, Ayana Dukey, who is an AKA and, it's quite fascinating. So if you like black history, check us out.
Yeah.
If you like drinking too. Yeah.
yeah. I got a little too trapped. I thought I closed out the Juneteenth one, but it was fun, but I was like, I probably should have ate something before this.
That's what we warn people, like, yo, have a decent meal before, maybe walk around a little bit every now and then,
because I'm not a drinker. Like I'll like socially I will, but like I had some Woodford Reserve and and I think maybe some like coke or something. I don't know what I had. Not cocaine, but like
yeah, that came out wrong.
I might have mixed it with ginger ale or something, I don't know, but it was a lot of Woodford Reserve, and I think I had just eaten Doritos.
Oh yeah, that's not a mix. That's not a good mix.
That wasn't good. The Last of Us Part Two came out, and I was just binging on that game. That was that was the only show that I did like during the pandemic.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't do any.
You weren't doing it. You didn't do none of the Zooms?
No.
I did. I got quite familiar with the Zoom shows.
How was
first?
It?
Yeah, I did it out of I need to practice. I need to to get myself saying words again.
Sure.
So it was just like it was like that. So it's just like getting out of blocks. It's a different muscle. It got to a point where I was just like, I got to do it, and I got to figure out a way to make it fun for myself.
How did you feel about getting back, like, fully, like?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I was very apprehensive going back out because, like, my first couple shows were out of town, mm-hmm. and I was going to places where people weren't wearing masks. And this is, like, in the midst of the lockdown. People are like, I'm tired of it. And I just want to be free. I'm like, bro, just... I hope you make it.
Yeah, I felt better after I got vaxxed. It was late March. Man. And then after I saw my parents, I was like, okay, it's time to go. It's time to, like, work, you know?
Yeah.
Time to get back at it. But...
Yeah, that's the way to do it, man. I'm happy to be back working.
So you're gigging. You're just gigging all around now.
Gigging all around. I'm maybe going out to Cali for maybe a couple of weeks.
Cool.
And maybe Phoenix also. I haven't decided. People are asking me if I'm going to go down to Austin to go visit the Creek or do shows at the Creek. Yeah. I haven't made that decision yet. I don't know if I want to make that jump as of yet.
What's holding you back? Like, because you're a guy that goes everywhere. Is it just like
Seems like. Yeah, it just seems like a culty, I have nothing better to do. Mm-hmm. Let me run after this mentality. It's like, oh, well, Rogan's there. The Creek's there. Let me go. I'm like, I need a little bit more than that.
Like
I need
some guarantees. The hot right now vapors.
Yeah, that's all it is. Mm. To me, at least. Like, if you're going down there, have your fun. But at least go down there and have something booked before you go.
Yeah. Oh,
Don't go.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I wouldn't be down there I've never been to Texas, so I would like to. I think Minus was down there.
Yeah, John went down there. He said it was cool. They're doing the daily mics, like they did up in New York, but it's not the same because, like, they would do three or four mics in one night at the Creek, and now I think they just do one or two.
Okay, all right.
So. Yeah, because, like, apparently there's not that much of a hustle as the New York comics have.
Oh, yeah. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Gordon, this has been great, man. I'm glad we were able to do this. I'm glad I locked you down. I was like, Gordon, I got you. Got to do the show again. Because you were on in, like, 2013.
Yeah, I was. Wow, it's been that long.
Yeah, you were, like, episode 30-something, maybe.
All right. Yeah, well, I'm happy to be back, homie.
Yeah, dude, it was so great to have you. So great to for you to just hang out with me. And where can people follow you?
BakerBone.com, all one word. Also at BakerBone on Instagram and Twitter. To hashtag Decepticomic Show. That's my show with Mike Brown, Dylan Stevenson, Sarome Russell, and John Minus. And I do a podcast called Period Piece where I interview my friends about their periods. And it's my fun shit. It's become a passion project because everyone was like, yeah, it's going to be weird. But it's actually turned out to be a very dope podcast. Yeah.
That's what's up, man. Gordon, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you. And I'll talk to you next time, everybody. Take it easy.